My fellow Americans, thank you. God bless and God bless America.
Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish.
Oh, damn it. There went Trump's speech. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Gay Talk 2.0, an LGBT podcast streaming live on Digital Stream Radio, where you can access that live stream every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you can do so by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. My name is Tom, and I am your host. And joining us today in Chris's absence, of course, is our returning co-host.
Hi, it's Elsie.
And the Queen of Bondo herself, and ripping it like it's no one's business.
Hey, y'all, Nick or Trish.
And welcome you all to
The Dish.
We all got it. Yes.
Yay.
You better work, girl.
Yes.
About time.
it only took 3 years.
So before we get started, it's worth noting that I am not feeling well, and so I'm drinking my little Powerade over here for whatever reason. And
I'm drinking mine.
And I'm drinking mine.
And if you see me get up all of a sudden and just disappear, just, you know, they know what to do. They can hold the fort down.
We'll figure it out.
But anyway, hi. Welcome back, guys. Another episode. Yay.
Yes.
Elsie's back in the studio, which is glorious.
Hi.
So by the way, before we go any further, so we ended up getting a review on iTunes.
Oh, did we now? I haven't looked.
Yes. And let me see if I can find it here. So it ended up saying,
shut it down.
It said, oh my God, Elsie makes my day. We need to have her every
you
time.
You shut up. Oh yeah. My God, you guys are
Elsie,
awesome.
Elsie, you got your first review.
That needs to go on my Facebook page, please.
You know, okay. It's funny because that you bring that up, because I was hanging out with somebody who listens to the show, like, religiously. And I was like, yeah. He was like, so what's going on with Chris? You know, I was like, he's in school. His class schedule's a little messed up right now, so he can't be with us. So Elsie's kind enough to fill in. And he was like, she's great. I was like, I know, right?
Who is this?
I'm not going to put them on spot.
Okay.
But.
Oh my God, go on. Really, please.
That head
go
is on.
No, it's just great to hear, you know, because like, you know, we don't have, you, as an ally of the community, you're not coming from the perspective of, you know, lesbian, gay, transgender, bi.
Because I'm a plus.
But you're so supportive, and you're so opinionated, and we love that. But like, you always bring something special to every show, and that's why it's so great to have you back on all the time.
You guys are amazing. Thanks so much for saying that. I love being here.
Well, we love having you. So that being said, why don't we kick it off to you and tell us how has your past week been?
Because
it's been a week since our last episode.
It has been a week, yes. My past week has been pretty uneventful, actually. You know, I did a lot of cleaning on Saturday because I'm wild like that.
Because you're wild?
Even use Clorox.
Oh.
All day, every day.
All day, every day.
I think I need to use Clorox.
Some of my
gut.
Boys came up from the city, so we hung out on Sunday. Went to the brewery. I had no beers because, you know.
And we still have no beers.
Oh, my God. Don't tell the other kids. I left my cooler, and I had a great selection, too. Mm. I might have to just try and show up next week when Chris is here, just so I can redeem myself. But you know, my week was pretty uneventful, so I'm going to have to get me some new friends up here that take me out with other single people or something. Nick.
Ooh, speaking of single.
What is that supposed to mean?
That we need to hang out.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like wingman each other.
Yeah, like text me.
Okay.
All right.
I'm like a great cook, by the way. And Tommy has never been to my house.
No, I have never been to
That's
your house.
That's because you live in Hamden.
That's right.
I knew
it's like
it was
in
coming.
The middle of nowhere.
I knew it was. There are no highways by my house. I get it. But I'll make it worth your while.
So when I say Hamden, let me just say, like, New Haven, you can get anywhere in like 10 to 15 minutes because of the highways, because of the access. But Hamden, which is sort of an extension of New Haven, it's a very vital and important part of what the greater New Haven is. It's like impossible to get to. And you go anywhere in Hamden, you're like, okay, this is like a half hour to 45 minute commitment. If you're really going into Hamden, you're right. It's about an hour.
Yeah.
I know.
Every time I decide that I want to go
and
have
it's literally like New Haven, Hamden. Like,
we have great spots though. And then there's my apartment. It's fun there. Okay.
Like when I really seriously have to do like a whole play for play, like anytime I'm doing like a hookup in Hamden.
So
I'm like, are you by the Merit? Because if you're not by the Merit, this is not going to work out.
I am by the Merit, as anything in Hamden could be by the Merit. You know, it's only like 35 minutes from the exit.
My point.
I swear to God, I
my
can't.
Point.
But if you make it to Hamden, we'll make a whole day out of it. We'll go to food trucks by the brewery. We'll go to the brewery. We'll go to a couple of more breweries. And then we can come to my house and have more beer.
And then we can't walk.
And then you can walk. You can just crash on my couch. Oh,
after you're done cooking for us, right?
After I'm done cooking for you.
You know what I want that I haven't had in such a long time?
Say mango.
Mango.
Because I am awesome.
And what is that?
God. Let's put that together. Okay. Like, we need to make this happen.
What is that?
So mango is it's a typical dish from Elsie's country, from Santo Domingo. It's typically served in the morning hours. And it consists of like plátano, right?
So green plantains. Mm-hmm. You boil them after peeling them, of course. Because apparently I learned the other day, some people don't peel them. And they're like, what is the big deal with this? You can't really eat this. Right. So then you mash them with a little bit of milk, or not milk, butter. And then you take some pickled onions and fry those and then pour it all over it. It is.
That sounds amazing.
It's so fucking good.
It's delicious. So, now, some people do sausage on top of it.
Yeah. So
I like sausage.
Yes. So do I. Mm-hmm. So we have that in common.
We all do, honey.
I know. Some this of us don't have it often here. Enough. But that's another story. Anyway. So yes. It's called salami, which is kind of a so sausage. Good. And there's all kinds of crap meat in it. Mystery meats that we don't ask questions about.
It's processed meat.
You just put it in your mouth. Just put it in
it
your
tastes
mouth.
Like good.
Most dicks. Yeah.
And then I'll make you fresh squeezed lemonade.
With vodka?
Obviously. Okay. Grow up. What am I? Not an adult. Grow up.
So the last time I went to DR, I literally, like, my favorite part of going and getting up in the morning was eating. Mango.
Yes.
Except for coffee, like coffee and milk. Like, I'm a milk in my coffee drinker. And they didn't have milk, but they had a cow.
You shut up.
So I went for a walk with Tuco, this little viejito, and he took me all the way down the finca. And I went and I'm walking through, dodging all these piles of like cow manure, and finally get to the cow. And he's like, this is how you do it. You want to try? And this little bitch, she
you
had these little
not.
Tiny horns. I touched her nipple and she started attacking me. I ran so fast. I stepped on every pile of shit from there to the gate.
I checked out mad that Tommy touched her nipples.
I cannot.
And she was like, I'm not allowing this gringo. You know. So anyway, so when you're from here, even if you're Latino, when you go into the islands, you're a gringo regardless.
Yes.
So they were like, I'm not allowing this gringo to touch my tits. Fuck you. Go drink your coffee black. And that's exactly what I did for the 2 weeks I was there. But oh my God, breakfast is so good. It is so hearty.
Yes. I'm going to have to host brunch for you guys.
You see?
Let's find a date.
All right.
It's happening.
I'm late.
I don't come to brunch without mimosas, by the way.
Oh my God. Are you like not an adult? Why in the hell will I bring you over to my house for brunch and not have mimosas?
All right. I love you. I know I don't have to worry.
I don't know what you think of me, but I don't think you hold me in very high regard.
Oh, no, I do. I'm just saying I'm not going to show up and get like coquito or something. Like, I want mimosas.
Absolutely not. You're having mimosas.
Was that racist?
A little bit, but it's
okay.
I'm
sorry.
Because coquito's a Puerto Rican thing.
Right, I'm the other kind of Mexican. A little bit north of that Mexican.
That was racist.
Country.
I'm sorry, I took it back.
What they drink in her country is Mama Juana.
Yes, and I have one.
What's Mama Juana?
Oh, it's. We do pitorro, they do Mama Juana, but
so
you can explain.
So, Mama Juana is. It's liquor
death.
That we essentially condition with different kinds of spices. So you throw some cinnamon and some wood to give it that smoky kind of taste. And then you dump some sugar rum in it, right? Brugal is the usual prefer brand. And then you let it just sit there for a while until it gets like really with the cinnamon and all the other sticks. And then you have like this really sweet but also smoky rum that'll fuck you up. It's a good time all around.
So I've had bad experiences with rum. I will try it.
We'll just you know, have you just lay on my couch? You'll be fine. You'll be fine, yeah. I promise.
3 days later. Nick, it's time to go.
It'll be Tuesday. Like, Nick,
you missed 2 days of work. You got
to
go.
Kind of have to go.
That is too funny.
Oh, my God. I'm going to give you, like, the whole Dominican experience when you come over.
It's amazing. But it really is.
Well, not the whole Dominican experience.
Well, you don't know. Mm-hmm. You don't know my friends.
All right, I'm there.
Este tigre va a gozar.
I know.
All right, so ever since Elsie joined the show, it's like I literally have a dictionary that I just like type in words because I don't know what you guys are saying at the time. I'm like, what? Like, what the hell is that?
I know. You know, I find myself doing that in meetings where I'll be in the middle of a whole with my little accent and I'll say something like, pero, the way that looks.
See, I get that. I know what that means.
Like Spanglish galore.
But like, it's seamless. And people just look at me like,
what?
Okay.
It happens.
It does.
I was so bad when I was in high school learning Spanish. Like, it got to the point where they just passed me. Like, I'm not even kidding you.
Were you the token in the class?
I'm the token and everything. But I like token legit. Gay. So, Senorita Peña, loved her. I still talk to her today, even though she's a Trump supporter. I don't want to talk about that.
Ew.
But anyway, she would ask me questions in class, and I would be like, ¿Cómo? And she'd be like, ¿Cómo? And I'd be like, ¿Cómo? And we would just go back and forth. I'm like, that's the answer you're getting from me. It's ¿Cómo? Like, literally. And so it just became a thing. Every time I would see her, I'd be like, ¿Cómo? And she'd be like, ¿Cómo?
¿Qué?
He learned
funny.
Something. ¿Qué? How or what? He learned something. Or how or why, right?
I love doing that when I fly and I have to sit by the emergency exits and they'll go through the whole spiel and what is expected of you and you have to speak English. So I let them get through the whole spiel and then I go, ¿Qué? And it never fails. It freaks them out. They'll send somebody over who speaks Spanish and explain to me how I can't sit there in English. And then I'll say, oh, okay, you know, that's fine. I got it.
I'm completely fine. It's fine.
We can go ahead. Taxi this plane.
I should try that and see what happens because I'm super white.
Oh, you should definitely. It's a good time. It embarrasses the shit out of my friends, but you know, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
And she's a jokester like that. She loves to joke.
Since
around.
You guys are both Hispanic, let me ask you a question. So I have a friend who no, seriously.
Scary.
So I have a friend who's Hispanic.
Uh-huh.
He's Mexican, but he does not present that way.
Okay.
And he feels like, because when I first met him, I would have never thought. And he feels like, in a way, he is less than because he presents white. Is that a thing?
Yes.
Well, it is. A lot of
and
people.
And it goes
need
two ways.
Yeah. And a lot of people need to understand, first of all, Mexicans have been in this country longer than we English people or any other ethnicities have been in this country. Don't forget that Texas and California and all these places were part of the Mexican heritage, hence why they have names like Sacramento and all these other Spanish names for their cities. But you will find that, you know, it's an array. I mean, when you look at the Mexican culture, it's so beautiful because you can see someone present extremely indigenous.
I love Mexico.
And then you have someone that could be
Northern, look just like you, Chris, yeah. Nick. So, yeah.
And have blue eyes, you know, blonde hair.
Yeah, because I'm Italian. I don't look Italian.
Right. So it's really interesting because, so you should know about our cultures. We are super shameless about being racist. Mm-hmm. We say things like, you should marry somebody lighter so you can make the race better. Like, we totally say things. We write songs about it. It's okay. Like, we're all okay with it, right? And so you find two dynamics. Go ahead.
It's so weird because all I want to do is be darker. I can't fucking tan.
I know. Like, I hear you. So it comes, of course, from the colonies and, the whole, you know, you're mixed, you're lighter, your skin
Eastern
is fairer.
Eastern European, you'll pass.
All of that, right. So we never really quite got over that, where we still feel like if you're lighter, you're kind of like better than the rest of the people who are darker. Now, when you look at my family, there's me, and then there's my brother, who's like super brown, and then there's my cousin, who's blonde and has green eyes, and we're all in the same family, because that's the kind of mix that we have, right? But because of that culture where it's like, oh, the lighter your skin, the better you are as a person, we never quite got over that. And so you find two dynamics. You have people who are... they're lighter, and so they blend well with Caucasians, right? And so they adhere to that because it gets them through some of the privilege, mm-hmm, of their skin tone, right? Or you'll have others, like maybe your friend, who feels like, I'm not in any of any of the groups because I'm not Mexican enough, but I'm also not white enough. So where am I? And it's very, very interesting the way that people approach that culturally, because it depends really on how important your understanding of your culture is.
Right.
Which side you go with. Like you're either, I'm never going to speak Spanish in front of anyone and I'm going to work on my diction and my accent so that nobody could tell that I'm Mexican. I'm super Mexican. I'm convinced that I was Mexican in a past life. Like, I can't. Like, I think that I'm a better Mexican dish cook than I am a Dominican dish cook. That's how much I love Mexicans.
I think it's an amazing thing, right? Their food, the cuisine, the Mexican cuisine is just absolutely incredible. The real stuff. None of this on the border crap that people
eat. You have to
go
to West Haven for burritos. What? It's like straight up from, have you been? Oh my God. It's like authentic Mexican food.
Yeah, you can't like this on the border stuff. It's like, you know,
Tex-Mex. It's not really.
See, I'm
really
obsessed with God. What's the name of the place right in Brantford?
The huge place.
No, it's like a little house. It's like this little teeny house on a corner in Brantford, and they have the best like chimichangas and burritos, and I'm like, everything is just like so good.
You have to go to this place in West Haven.
Oh, jalapeno heaven.
So authentic. Like it's the only Mexican restaurant really that I would go to.
Like, you know, like, you know, when you're
it's
getting
authentic,
authentic
and you call out the next day.
Yeah, pretty much. when you have like when they bring the remolacha and it's like fresh and you can you still taste these
remolacha.
It's beets. It's beets.
With crema?
Uh-huh. Imagine that. Mm. It's so good. It's so good. But anyway, we got into this conversation because you're saying that your friend...
Yeah. I'm sorry. That was like completely sidebar. But hey, it's a good conversation.
He's conflicted, right? That he doesn't pass. He's not enough.
I think that... I mean, I think in today's... okay. So I think what's happening really is in today's culture and in today's hiring pool...
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There is a huge push for equality, which is amazing and important. And I think that in most cases, most companies, if they're doing it right, are making sure that at least every candidate or every group of final candidates has POC within it, right?
Right.
And
right.
That, I think, is very important. And as this individual is a person of... technically, he's a person of color. He is Mexican, but he presents white. He feels like he's been passed over in certain jobs because of that.
Because he's not dark enough.
So he has lost. He's lost. He hasn't gotten three jobs to which he was qualified for. But the person that was hired was a person of color. And he is like, I just wish I could say I'm Mexican, which is something that he wouldn't just do in an interview.
Do they still ask you on your application what race or place of origin you're from?
No, you can't legally, no.
Okay. Interesting. Well, I mean, you know, and like I said, there's so many like in Puerto Rico as well as in the Dominican Republic, you'll see people that are as white as a piece of paper and some that are as dark can be. And, you know, it's a melting pot. One of the advantages of being from the Caribbean is that you get to experience all of it.
Uh-huh.
Right. From the people, from the music, the infusion of Afro beats and all of those instruments that were brought over into our music, you see it and you feel it. And the cuisine, too. The food. Oh. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
But, you know, as anyway. With anything, even in our own Caribbean nations, we still deal with a lot of racism, internal racism.
Yes.
Even within people. I mean, you have, for example, you know, racism against people that are darker than other people.
And just
Puerto Rico.
Only slightly so. Like, you don't have to be that dark either. Like, only slightly so.
And not too long ago, I was reading some sort of attempt of whitening the race in the Dominican Republic and this whole thing against Haitians and crossing the border.
So that Haitian thing, it's twofold. So it's, you've got the issue that any country with unprotected borders struggles with, right? And our economy is not that strong to support a high influx of immigrants, unfortunately. But it's the same idea as here. the reason they cross over is because they will find work because companies will abuse them and get the cheaper labor, and that's why they do it. But then there's also a lot of history there because we were under their reign for a while. So African slaves actually were the first to separate from the Spanish reign in Dominican Republic, in La Española, which is the entire island. And that's how Haiti came to be, because they essentially all fled to that side of the country, the west side of the country. And at one point, we were actually under the reign, and Dominicans never got over that. So it's like, well, we have a little more European blood in us than you Africans do, and we're gonna be under you. We never got over that. So there's that, and then there's the other thing with the whole, you know, political thing and jobs and the cultures are so different, and the fact that our borders are unmanned. But what people don't understand is that that's not the person's fault. All they're looking to do is feed their families.
That's right.
You know, this actually, it's triggering a thought in my head since this is a gay show. I want to bring it back.
This is a gay show?
Yeah.
Stop.
Yeah, yeah. And it's totally my fault because we totally, like, left field at it. But I think it's important that we talk about it because we're talking about racism within the community of the Latino community, right? But let's talk about homophobia, right? Oh. And not only homophobia within the Latino community, but within the African-American community. I was recently watching Cheer, which is a new Netflix series.
I love that. Obsessed. What is his name with a D?
Ladarius?
Ladarius. Oh, I'm in love with him.
Wait, is he the one? Are you talking about the one with all of the with the Matt talk?
Yes.
No,
not him. It's the other one, the tall one.
Yeah, yeah, Ladarius.
It's Ladarius. Love me some Ladarius.
So that's actually the exact person I wanted to talk about. So Ladarius grew up in a very difficult situation. His mother went to jail and is now out, and he now has a relationship with her and whatnot. But growing up, he lived with his three brothers,
and he was a football kid, and so were the brothers.
But he wanted to cheer, and he's gay, and openly admits it on the show. But he talks about the struggle of being. I mean, you know, I was a white kid that came out and had my struggles, but he talks in a way that I can never imagine. It wasn't even just verbal abuse, but it was like, you are less than, like, you can't do this. You are. It was almost like, you're degrading our entire race, our family. You're making us, and
right,
like
right.
the way he portrayed it in the show to me was just like so powerful. And I think that it's kind of a perfect segue to talk about, if we're talking about racism within the people of color community, why can't we talk about that?
We absolutely can. And it's culturally the idea that our culture has about what being a man is, it's more toxic than it is here. And so that only makes it worse because you're cut off completely from the entire family. And so my nephew's boyfriend, actually, so his mom is quote unquote okay with him being gay and being in a relationship, but don't tell the rest of the family. So he's supposed to essentially hide this entire part. Like, they live together. They share responsibilities. They're partners, like long-term partners. But she's okay with it as long as he's not being gay, I guess, in front of the family.
And by that, you mean like flamboyant or outwardly, like, affectionate to his partner.
Or like acknowledge that he has a male partner.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and it's so heartbreaking to me because we are just the worst. We're the worst at that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it has to do with our very, very toxic idea of what it means to be any gender, really.
Yeah. And I think, too, you know, like, we talk about, you know, we see a higher rate of suicide and homicide in the transgender community of color. And I think that has a lot to do with it, too. I think people feel like they can attack them or put them down in a way because they're not white. You know what I mean? I could be wrong, but I also feel like people within our very small community, when you look at the heterosexual community, we have a seriously high suicide rate. And it's incredibly crazy. But then you look within that suicide rate at the people of color, and it's even higher.
Right.
And it's crazy to me that these kids are killing themselves. And I think it's because of what you're saying, because of the toxic masculinity, because of the need to always try to prove yourself, right? Because I feel like the white man put the color community down for so long that this masculinity, this toxicity grew. They had to be the strongest. They had to be
right.
the best.
And well, so, and you're also now part of two minorities, right? So you're a person of color who also happens to be gay. Mm-hmm. And so...
But not only that, you have to think about, too, that with people of color and in Latino communities and Black communities, the problem, too, is religion. Religion
yes.
has a plays a huge role in how people in the LGBT community are seen to the rest of the family, right? And so they look at you, oh, you're a sexual deviant. The Bible says that you're a sin.
Right.
You're going to die.
And you're going to bring shame to the whole family.
And so there's a lot of elements of, okay, well, you know, I don't fit in here. My own family's telling me that I don't belong here, that I'm not right, that there's something wrong with me, but I know there isn't, and now I need to find a space in where I fit in. And sometimes that means that for people of color, they have to leave home and never look back and right. leave their families behind. Mm-hmm. And so that sets into a pattern of not having the support of family members, of people that you grew up with, that you loved and wanted to be with, that leads to loneliness, that leads to depression and suicide, and leads to, like, for example, you're more likely to have support as a transgender white woman or a transgender Latina than you are as a transgender Black woman from your own family because of the heavy influence that religion and machismo in general has influenced the way people think and the way they react to the LGBT community.
But if we go back a little bit to Ladarius, right? I want to just point on something. He survived. He went through all of that, and he became, and he's super successful now. I mean, for lack of better term, he's a celebrity. But if you watch the show, there were moments where I wanted to punch him in the face. Like 100%. I wanted to punch because he was so angry. Yeah. And he was taking it out on other people. And it's like, how not only are we seeing people that are dying at a higher rate for suicide, but then we have a lot of people that have unresolved issues. And I wish that there was a way. And I think you see toward the end of the series him starting to like connect more and really trust his friends and listen to his friends. But it's so hard to get people to that place and say it's okay to talk to somebody.
That's part of the journey.
Right. But it's got to be really tough for you to grow up around your siblings. That's we learn to love from our parents and our siblings. That's,
yeah.
Those are our first friends. You know what I mean? So to grow up in an environment where you feel you're made to feel lesser than, and you can't trust people and you can't be yourself because you're afraid that somebody's going to hurt you because you're expressing who you are. To go from that, and he was there in that environment for a very, very long time, you know, well into his
until he left for school.
Until he left for school. So we're talking about his late teens. Going through that from such a young age, it's got to be hard for you to understand that not everybody is a raging fucking asshole. Mm-hmm. And that it is okay and that people will accept you for a person, which you are. And so, you know, it's going to, I'm sure that it's going to still take him a lot longer to just learn to trust the people around him. And it's everybody around him's job to make them feel safe,
mm-hmm.
and that it is okay.
One more time. What show are we talking? I haven't seen it.
Cheer.
On okay. Netflix. Watch it.
And so, is the character a real character?
Yeah.
Like, are you following the lives of real people, or is this a fictional show?
So, Cheer is a Netflix series. It's about, if our listeners don't know, it's about
competitive cheerleading.
Yeah. So, cheerleading is one of the most dangerous sports.
Yes.
And people don't realize that, but basically, there are a couple, you look at I think there are two different national championships, and they were going to one in Daytona. So basically, they train all year, and then they go to Daytona to compete. Now, this group, this one school, it's a community college, actually, they are one of the leading winners. They either win or come in second.
Right.
Like, so this program to get into is like, very hard to get into. There are 40 people that get into the program. It's a 2-year program, and you have 18 people that actually compete at the nationals. So it's about, basically, it's about these individuals, where they came from, and then everything they have to go through to get to this competition.
Gotcha. So it's almost like Dance Moms, is that what it is? But like real.
But better.
Right? No, it's way real. Better. It's way better.
Okay, it's just following people.
Right, and these are competitive athletes. Yeah. Like people don't understand competitive cheerleading. You're like an all-around athlete.
Yeah. There's this one episode that you watch. So they have different things that they have to hit for the competition. It's like, your pyramids
are a big deal. Yeah.
And so getting the routine down is really hard. And it's like you are throwing people in the air. You are putting 3 people on top of one another and they're all holding each other up.
Like, so you're responsible for somebody's life.
Right. So there are accidents that happen. And like there's this one episode where like every 5 minutes you just hear boom, somebody hitting the ground. And there's this one I will never, like when I saw it happen, one of the girls was, they were learning the pyramid and she went literally flying in the air, and the people that were supposed to catch her weren't in their position, and she saw it happening in the air and she hit the ground and all you heard is just and then screaming.
Oh my God.
That girl was supposed to compete on the mat. She couldn't compete, and that was her last year.
And that's what you get about 2 years as a cheerleader, and then you get, I think it's like what, 2 minutes and 37 seconds
at
on
nationals,
the mat at nationals, and that's it.
Yep.
That's crazy.
And then you're done.
But it's so amazing, though.
It is amazing to watch.
And then, like, even... I'm not going to give it away. You got to watch it. You got to watch it.
Sure, I'm going to watch it.
It's a really good show.
So since we're talking about shows, I watched a movie the other day. It's been out for a while, but I have to tell you, Cynthia Erivo is just absolutely incredible. Not only does that woman have an amazing voice, I got an opportunity to watch Harriet, the movie. Oh, my God.
I haven't watched it yet.
Powerful performance from her. The score is amazing. The songs are beautiful. The story was, obviously we know the story of Harriet Tubman, and you know, she was one of the most famous of the abolitionists and people that, you know, networked through the Underground Railroad getting slaves from the South up north. But it was an incredible story overall. If you have not seen it, watch it. It's incredible. I was just like the whole time like, It was good. But she's masterful, and she's got a beautiful voice. And
I'm totally putting that in my kit.
So
she's amazing. She does a lot on Broadway. She was just on tour with Matthew Morrison, I think.
She was in the Color Purple with oh my God, American Idol,
Jennifer Hudson,
for a while, and she's done so much work. But what an incredible voice! Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. We'll watch it. So speaking of movies, the Oscars were last night.
I did not watch.
Neither did I.
We were working.
You know why? Because of how badly they fucked Leo for all those years.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry. I'm not going to do that.
No, do it.
Go on. I'm not going to get into a Leo rant on the show because those motherfuckers.
Every night in my dream, Leo wins.
I'm just saying, like, really, that was not... Don't do this to yourselves. Go on.
So there were some notable moments that happened. You know, obviously, Best Dressed has to go to...
me?
No.
Oh, you sat there in front of your TV, right? Sipping champagne in your gown?
What's the actress who was also in Harriet? Janelle Monáe. Oh my God,
her dress was
gorgeous, and she's amazing. And talk about LGBTQ representation at the Oscars. You know, when you think about Billy Porter was there, of course, and his usual very androgynous, just masterful dressing from head to toe. But there was a couple of things, like, for example, Eminem all of a sudden just pops up on stage and starts singing. And people were like, what the fuck is up with this?
Kanye.
So, there's a reason why he was there. So the rapper tweeted after his performance that, you know, back in 2002, I believe it was, when the movie The Green Mile or The Eight Mile.
Eight Mile.
The 8 Mile came out. he won best song at the Oscar, but he was never there to actually be able to pick it up or get it. And so 18 years later, they have him back to perform the song. I'm like, why did it take you 18 years? That's so fucking random and weird. Like, really? But anyway, yeah, that's basically what happened. And so they
that
had him back.
Really weird.
Yeah. They had him back to come in and sing the song that he won an Oscar for.
I feel like somebody may have dropped out.
Probably. And they were like,
they were like, hey, this is a good idea. Let's do it.
When was it that he won? He won the award. And let's see here. Oh, it's coming. 2002. It was for the film 8 Mile.
So, yeah.
And then, of course, the other notable moment. Oh, she's starting. Okay. The other notable moment, of course, was Laura Dern. She was just incredible. She's so beautiful. And her winning had a lot of people in the queer spaces just going bananas, because a lot of people don't realize that she has been going through a lot of stuff recently in her career. Very successful, obviously, with her stints in some of the movies that she's been playing in. She was also in The Last Jedi, I believe. She played... Colonel Holdor or something like that. Anyway, but what a lot of people don't realize that as a result of her... Yeah, she's going through. Well, you.
I screwed it up. Yeah.
Of course, and I'm gonna. There we go. Anyway, so a lot of people don't realize that Laura Dern played the love interest of Ellen DeGeneres back in 1992 during the Puppy episode when Ellen DeGeneres came out.
Oh.
And as we know, Ellen DeGeneres lost her job. She lost her show.
She did.
And as a result of Laura Dern playing her love interest, the person who was responsible for her coming out, she also lost a lot of jobs as a result. And she was blacklisted by the people in Hollywood, and she wasn't getting roles. So for 3 or 4 years, she was also getting death threats as a result of her joining Ellen DeGeneres in that very critical moment in our history, in U.S. history, when a woman on national television on a national syndicated sitcom came out and said that she was gay. And, you know, she lost so much for it. But it's just incredible to see that, you know, like, for example, she said, you know, some say never meet your heroes. But I say if you're really blessed, you get them as your parents. So she was thanking a lot of people. She thanked her parents. She thanked Ellen DeGeneres in her speech. Overall, it's just incredible to see someone who, being a straight woman, was affected so much by the roles that she played. I'll give you examples. So you look at, what's the person's name that played Yolanda Saldivar in the movie Selena?
Oh, yeah.
What is her name? She's that lady.
Lady, right? So when she played Yolanda Saldivar in the movie Selena, people started threatening her.
It was only implied.
Yeah.
It was only implied. It wasn't like, oh, this is what it is.
It's incredible that, you know, like people lost thought of the fact that she was playing a role. And so they started threatening her life. They started throwing stuff at her in public. It's crazy, right? To even think that a lot of this is even possible. So, so what ended up happening is that by her winning, the gays of sort of kind of, you know, realizing that she also was part of this incredible moment in our history and suffered as a result, we're so cheering for her. Yeah. And I just thought I wanted to mention that too. Other things that happened at the Oscars that I saw videos on, of course, were like the best dressed list and people running around, but Billy Porter, my God, him and his heels, like he had these amazing boots and he's just like, owning every little bit of himself and just really going out there. And
I might have to just watch his moment on the red carpet because I gave up on the Academy.
Yeah, well.
We're not going to do it.
Okay. Why?
Well, I think it's also really important to
know Tommy
who won Best Picture. Like,
it made, oh right, that movie
made history.
I was getting there, but she stopped me because, like, she said something.
I think that's the most important thing to note. Honestly,
Best Picture. Sure. Go for it.
Parasite.
Yeah,
Parasite is
it's a foreign film.
Yeah, it's the first foreign film to ever win Best Picture. It's an Asian film.
I'm sure a lot of you know,
high name
producers were super pissed.
Yeah,
but like, I mean, the Scorsese's and all of them.
I mean, it's a huge history maker. It's not, you know, it's an Asian film by an Asian creative team, by an Asian writer, and it won Best Picture. Like, that's huge. That's fucking huge.
It is. It's amazing.
It is. It almost makes me want to not hate the Academy that much, but then, you know.
They're trying.
I guess.
Why do you hate them so much? I'm trying to, like, probe her into going into a... But
I don't know. We got to take a break because I got to pee, but I'll give it to you. Go.
No. Listen. He was fucking amazing in Basketball Diaries, and I'm fucking...
Are we still talking about Leah?
Why are you doing this to me? Let's get a break. Let's get a break.
Oh, all right. Well, listen, we are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we have more Dish, a couple of more stories to talk about among some of the other things that we're going to be talking about. So here's some music and we will be right back.
Hard to see you with a man you call your friend, but in the end I know I don't have much time to tell you why I wanna die, but then I cry, so then I lie, so I don't make you bend time. Cause if you
Welcome back from the break. That was Time by the incredible Pat Riley. And we've got, we're back. I still feel like crazy in here. And, but we are here and we're queer. Well, at least two of us. We were just discussing that, you know. AC. Oh my God.
AC, you and I'm are not even
drinking.
Wow.
I'm vecino dominicano.
Elsie, you know, she often gets confused for being, well, not confused, but often gets accused of being a lesbian. Is that the right choice of words? Or people often think you are?
They do. I wouldn't use accused because that has a negative connotation.
Yeah,
to it,
so,
you know, so
I take it back.
Yes, you should know better.
Okay, sorry. So we were talking about the Oscars a little bit before we went on break, and I just wanted to point out that ABC News just released a story saying that the Oscars this year has had ratings drop so low. It's the lowest it's ever had, about 3 million less viewers seeing the Oscars this year than at any other point in time in history. And so that's telling of how people feel about the Oscars, like Elsie over here and her.
I think that'll change, though. I feel like it's a slow process, but yeah. I feel like it's happening. I feel like people are finally starting to make room at the table and inviting people to join the conversation.
Which is important, which is why they got into a big hot water, you know, like 4 or 5 years ago when, you know, a lot of the people of color that were nominated that did amazing work and amazing jobs weren't winning. And, you know, aside from Sidney Poitier, and when you think about like Denzel Washington and Catwoman, help me out here.
Halle Berry.
I mean, they're probably, and of course, Octavia Spencer, they're probably the few. And what's her face? Oh my God. How to Get Away with Murder. Viola Davis. Viola. Thank you.
I love her. And I think she's
beautiful. Wait, is that her name on the show or her actual
No,
name?
That is her name. Well, are you talking about her or
Annalise
the producer?
Keating is the name of,
thank you.
Of her.
So I'm proud of myself.
Yeah, should be.
So, you know, aside from those five people, I mean, like, we really haven't seen significant roles or supporting actor roles or best actress or best actors be awarded to people who are doing magnificent work. And it's pretty sad. And so, you know, the Oscars have been going through it as a result of that. And I think you're right. Bringing people to the table and allowing people to come in and have a part and a say in how the show was produced and how the show was networked to allow people of color and other ethnicities be a part of the conversation, because then you start seeing things like, for example, having a show or a movie win Best Picture that has nothing to do with anything that's made here in the U.S. by any of the major production companies or any of the major or any of the other known producers and things like that. So I think it's good to see.
That's part of my – so I know that, you know, there's the whole Leo thing.
He lost.
But – but – you like it.
I do.
Stop poking me.
I get a kick
out
of it. Okay.
Other than that, which is where the dissent started for me, personally. But other than that, it's just a little ridiculous that you have this amazing productions, but if they don't represent our idea of what our country looks like, they don't get recognized.
That's right.
They don't get recognized. And it's really, really sad. So you're just going to continue to lose viewers.
That's right. So wake up. So anyway, before break, I was going through my Facebook feed and News 8, which is a local news organization here in Connecticut, reported on a story in where aid and dying, the debate is expected to come back Capitol for discussion. So there has been quite a lot of controversy about people being able to have the being able to make the decision to decide whether or not they want to have assisted suicide. If you're terminally ill and you know that, you know, prolonging your life is just going to make you suffer, can you, as a human being, consciously make the decision to have some sort of assisted help in ending your suffering? Should you be allowed to make that decision? And I remember how impactful this conversation was 10, 15 years ago with Dr.
Kevorkian,
who was doing it in California, I believe. It was the state, if I'm not mistaken. And where he was helping people, you know, come to terms with the fact that they were terminally ill and they would end their lives. And it was so polarizing back then. So I wanted to throw that out on the table. I mean, I have my own personal feelings behind it, but I'm interested to know what you guys think about that. Like, for example, if you found yourself in a situation.
Absolutely. No thought. Absolutely. So when we look at the things that happen when you have a sick pet that is suffering and you're told by their vet, you know, it is inhumane to keep them suffering. They're not going to get any of that better. Why is that different from a human? And it's quality of life. So we keep you alive for our own selfish reasons a lot of times because we don't want to feel like, oh, I didn't do all I could for my loved ones. This is not about you. This is a person who's terminally ill. They're not getting any better. Their quality of life is crap, but they're also a burden on everyone around them because you have to look after them and you have to watch them suffer until they die. And if someone is of sane mind to make that decision, I think absolutely we should respect that. Because what is the point of continuing to watch your loved ones suffer when they know that they're not going to get any better? Nick? I know. It's tough.
It's a tough conversation because, you know, we talk about suicide on the show all the time from a different perspective, right?
Yeah.
So
I think that let's start from this place. I think that the term assisted suicide should not be used,
but that's what they refer to it. But
because suicide, we all know on this show, it's near and dear to me. And it means something so different.
Right.
Yes, somebody is suffering when they commit suicide in most cases, but in a lot of cases, they're not suffering. They are suffering, but suffering that they can overcome if they had the support.
Right. But your body has given up, literally. It doesn't matter how strong your spirits are. Your body has now given up.
Right.
You're not making a decision necessarily out of pure desperation or because you're not accepted and you're an outcast and you're not happy. And you feel like, what is the point of going on living if you're not going to be loved?
Right.
That's a different desperation.
Mm-hmm.
When your body has physically given up and there is nothing else that you can do, that's an entirely different story.
Yeah, no, I think you're 100% right. And that's why I think the term itself is wrong.
I agree.
I don't think
that's
it's assisted suicide. I think it's, I don't know what the term would be, but I feel like it's more like help me find my peace.
Yes.
Or terminate treatment, right? So at this point, I mean, you can look at it from a point of, okay, well, you were having treatment, but you're no longer having treatment. Or you decide that you are going to refuse treatment and please help me end this saga, right? And so
that doesn't mean if somebody is 35, you know, or 25 or 45 or whatever, and they come in because they got into an accident, they're in a coma, that's not where I'm not sitting here saying, yeah, no.
Unplug them.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying if you are, like you said, of sound mind and you want, and you are suffering and you are in pain and you are witnessing your family struggle around you.
And you're in bed. There's no quality of life. You're not able to sit up and have a meal with your loved ones. You're not able to take your children and put them on your lap.
I mean, even when it comes to be honest with you, like dementia and stuff like that, like it's a slippery slope because, I mean, there are people that I've seen, there are people that in my life that have dementia and they have said, like, if I don't remember you, I don't want to be here.
That's a little tough, though.
It's tough, right?
So that's exactly what stories like this or efforts like this are causing. It's that conversation about people, the conversations that you need to have. Because when you think about what's already in place, if you get into an accident and you're my wife, let's just say, and you're in a coma and the doctors are telling me, you know,
you're brain dead.
She's brain dead. There's no quality of life. This is going to be horrible. I'm given the chance to unplug you.
And that's a tough call, which is why, since I was about 23, I have that written on paper. My sister gets to unplug me because that bitch will. I cannot trust my mom to do it. I can definitely not trust my dad to do it because my dad thinks that you can overcome anything, even brain death. Mm-hmm. So I can't.
You can pray it away.
And I have life insurance, so they will allow the hospital to milk that life insurance until there's no more money mm-hmm. before they decide to unplug. If I'm brain dead or if I'm going to have really no quality of life, don't do that to yourselves. Don't do it to me. I don't want to put you through that.
Yeah. I mean, I think the reality is, I think we're all, at the end of the day, I think most people at this table and that I've had conversations with are on the same page mm-hmm. with assisted suicide. I think the problem is what we're calling it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's literally the issue.
Because, you know, you can already decide, like, let's say, for example, you suffer a really bad accident. You could have already, by form of proxy or having a conversation with an attorney, already decide that you are a do not resuscitate person. You can have a DNR which is the same. So if you can make that decision before something happens.
I have a DNR too.
Right?
Yeah.
If you can make that decision before it even happens, just being preemptive because you don't want to drag your loved ones through some craziness, why would you not be able to do that when you're of sound mind?
Right. And I think about my mother and what she would go through because mm-hmm. she will never leave my side. And mm-hmm. I know that, and I'm not going to put her through that. If my quality of life, I don't care either. Let's say that my brain is not dead, but I'm intubated and I can't eat by myself and I can't walk. And now she has to bathe me and she has to feed me. You let me do that.
I think if there's hope of recovery,
that's like tricky.
It's tricky, but I think if there's like hope of recovery, it's tough, right? I mean.
That's a conversation that you're having with your doctor, right? So if you're of sound mind of state and you're saying to your doctor, you're telling me that I'm not going to have any quality of life. I need you to help me end this.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
No one else should have a say in that conversation.
Absolutely not.
And so it's just so tough, right? It's a really, really, unless you're married, you know, but I'm assuming you probably had that conversation with your significant other.
Because it's tough. I actually, my friend got into a motorcycle accident. Like he was sideswiped by a car and he was brain dead for about a week. And his brothers made the call to unplug him because there was no brain activity. He had been on a respirator for like ever. And the wife lost her shit because she felt that as the spouse, it should have been up to her. But then she wanted to hold on to him and then she mm-hmm. didn't want to unplug him. And he had been literally dead for days when they decided to unplug him. And so even that is tough to put on a spouse.
Yeah.
That's mm-hmm. why I'm doing my sister.
She's gonna walk in, take it out.
She's on her way to the hospital. She's gonna be like, "Wait, she's been in the unplug her. What are we doing? Come on!
I'm wasting gas right now.
Come on! Wrap it up."
It will be interesting to see how this all plays out in our state legislature. Obviously, they're introducing. But are you okay?
Yeah, I thought I unplugged something.
No, you're good.
So I want to say one more thing. Going back to my point about the concept of assisted suicide and the actual like term, right? So in my brain, I hear it and I think, you know, and this might get a little heavy and we've talked about it on the show, but I think to myself, would I have ever helped Matt kill himself? And the straight up answer is hell fucking no.
No.
Hell fucking no.
I agree.
100%. And that is what assisted suicide means to me. It means you're helping somebody take their life that is in complete good health, and they are struggling maybe mentally, maybe they have something going on in life, maybe they have something going on in their family life, and they don't want to live anymore. And those are things you can get help for. Yes, there are people that are unbalanced, and it takes a long time to make it work, and to make the meds work, to make the therapy work, and sometimes it doesn't, and let's be honest, it doesn't. That's why suicide is suicide, right? Yeah. But assisted suicide is not assisted suicide. Assisted suicide is soothing somebody who is literally suffering.
Yeah.
Like physically suffering. Mentally suffering, yes, you physically suffer, but if you are in good health and you can find a way to get out of there, it's complicated, but it's convoluted. Yeah. It's not the right term for what it actually is.
I completely agree.
Yeah. I think that I think that if they are going to approach something like that or try to bring something on the legislative level, that they really should consider calling it something else.
It's like conversion therapy. It's torture.
Yeah.
Seriously.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not conversion therapy. It's actually torture.
You're torturing. That always reminds me of my friend Ramon. We went to school together, and his dad, who was actually a physician, used to give him shock therapy. When the kid, you know, shared that he thought that he might be into other little boys, put him through it for years until he couldn't take it anymore. And he ended up running away from home, which is the conversation that we have all the time. Mm-hmm. Because you're not accepted. Your own father, who's a physician, wants to torture you because of your sexual preference.
Makes me wonder, where the hell did he get his degree in?
It's fucking pediatrics.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
And psychology.
So, but anyway, I just wanted to throw that out that I figured that it would be a really good way to...
And it's a conversation that should be had more because we don't have a conversation like that at all. And it makes us uncomfortable and it makes us feel like we're being selfish by not giving you the opportunity to Nick's point, to potentially get better. But where does it end?
I can't even have that conversation. I can't even mention the word ma if I were to ever die. Without her breaking down into, like,
my mom and my dad,
hysterical, like, sobbing.
I had to renew the information on one of my life insurance policies once. And I said, because, you know, we're Dominican Hicks, so his birth date is not what's on his birth certificate because they register him late, like 6 full months. And so I never remembered. And so I call him and I'm like, I need your birthday. And he's like, why? And I'm like, oh, I have to update this information. Oh, you're planning to die? I'm like, don't be dumb. Like, nobody plans to die. This is where you get life insurance.
So that's like, actually really funny you brought up because I recently had to change my life insurance policy. And I called my dad and I was like, hey, dad, this is a weird topic to bring up, but, you know, I have this much money in life insurance. I have more than I need because I want to make sure that not only if anything were to happen to me, that my funeral's covered, that all of my debt is covered, student loans, bitches, please.
Right.
Like, that they don't have to struggle, right? And so I was like, all right, this is how much it is, and I need this information from you so that I can blah, 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 blah. You're going to get paperwork in the mail, blah, whatever. And my mom fucking calls me.
Of course.
I'm not even joking you. My mom calls me. She's like, okay, so your dad's a beneficiary? And I was like, Mom, are you serious right now? It's my life insurance policy. Of course dad's the beneficiary. Like, I mean, like, dad handles all the money. My mom doesn't do the money thing. My dad does the money thing. So, like, of course I'm going to make dad the beneficiary. And so now, not even kidding you, it's 50-50.
Good for you.
I took
everybody off of mine. Like, I had it, if this person can't do it, then this person. And then there was my brother. And then he had kids. So I took his ass off.
And put the
all
kids
of my
on.
Policies, and I put the kids on. And then he's like going down the list with me, which I stopped telling people who will be the beneficiary for my life insurance because I don't want people getting ideas. And he's like going through the list and he's like, Angel, who's one of our nephews, Angel is before me. And I'm like, we're talking about my potential death here, and that's what you're focusing in? Who gets the fucking money? He's like, I just don't understand. How was he before me on that list? I mean, you're not even on the list anymore. Yeah.
My coworker just got engaged. And we're in this fucking meeting about health insurance, life insurance, short-term disability, all this stuff. And he asked the question, how many times in a year can we change, like, who the beneficiary is? And we all looked at him. We were all like, what? You just got engaged. She's like, I just want to know.
I mean, like, you know, things happen. There's Thanksgiving coming up. Who pisses me off at dinner?
And the guy goes, look, if you get into a fight with your girlfriend and you're pissed off, you can go online 5 minutes later and say, you're getting 10% less. And, like, it's done. And I'm like, oh, my God, we are having this conversation right now in this benefits meeting.
These are real things that come up.
I know.
Like, oh, well, fuck you. I'm going to change this life insurance policy.
I can't have that conversation with my mother. My mother, like, will break down.
I'm literally like, this bitch just shanked me. I got to change this real quick.
I know.
Oh, my God.
She ain't getting shit now.
I used to tell everybody where they were on the list, and then I decided, I'm going to delete everybody from that list, and I'm not going to tell who's getting that money because I don't want anybody getting any ideas because we don't get to change it as often. We get
once a year.
You're going to piss me off at Christmas.
We can't and change how much we get, just show. Who gets
Well, you
got
to make sure that if they're going to piss you off, it's by November, right? Because we've got open enrollment because and it ends
on the 30th.
No, but you can't change. You can change the beneficiary. You just can't change how much you get.
You got to jump through hoops and high water just to be able to submit all this paperwork.
It has to be like a life-changing event, which apparently doesn't happen for people who are single.
My boyfriend shanked me. I want to change this.
That's a life-changing event.
I know.
It's for me, it's like I can't have that conversation with my mother. She literally just destroys. She just throws herself on the floor. No, you cannot die here. I'm like, mother,
I
relax.
Hear you.
And I'm like, so I said to her, I said, Ma, that's fine. Don't worry.
I'm a beneficiary.
I have all her information anyway.
I'm going to have to take care of the whole thing. You know it.
And so it's like, for me, it's tough to be able to have that conversation. So one day I was sitting with her and I was having a conversation. And I said, Ma, you know, we need to talk about the fact that, you know, you are in your 60s. You're getting up in that age and where something could happen. And I need to know what it is that you expect from us.
Right.
For your final preparations. You know, do you want to be buried? Do you want to be cremated? And she just starts bawling. And I'm like, Ma, but this is important. Like, and my brother's over here. We're going to bury her. I was like, no.
Not if she doesn't want to.
Uh-uh.
We're going to cremate her. And then I'll get some ashes. You get some ashes. No. We're going to. I said, see, Ma, this is why we need to have everything in writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let it be what you want. Like, my mom.
Like, I'm not wishing your death, but.
No, but it's.
But it's inevitable.
Yeah.
My mom has, like, plots in the Dominican Republic. I'm like, but you know how much it is to bring a dead body into another country?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what you're doing. You better donate that shit because I am not putting you on a plane.
To go bury you somewhere.
Yes. I told her. I was like, I don't know what you're going to do with that. It's land. Go give it up because I'm not putting you on a plane. If you die in the U.S., you know, many, many years from now when it happens, you are not getting on a plane because who's going to visit you? Like, grow up. You think I'm going to come visit you in some cemetery back in the Dominican River? It's not happening. So grow up.
Yeah.
You know, this has got this conversation definitely, this whole show... has been like straight up left field.
Uh-huh.
But I'm going to say one more thing and then we're definitely moving on. It's interesting because we talked about Matt earlier. Matt was buried. And I visit him. I mean, his the anniversary is coming up on the 27th. And I'll go visit, leave flowers or whatever. And I was talking to his mother. And we talked about it like 1,000 times. But Matt actually did not want to be buried. He wanted to be cremated. And... the decision was made that he was buried, and Lisa has yet will not go visit because his wishes weren't carried out. She's not angry at any of the family members. Like,
who's Lisa? Mom?
Yeah, mom. She's not angry about it or anything like that, but it's like more of like, I knew this is what he wanted. This is what happened, and I'm not going
to acknowledge
the fact that that's where he lies because in my heart, he's everywhere.
Yeah. Well, I just want to point out that it's never too late to do what your son wanted. You could have. It's a touchy subject, but you know, if you are really focused on making sure that you grant someone's last wish, you can have the body exhumed and cremated.
You can.
Yes,
if you need that closure. So and you know, we get into the conversations about how everybody grieves differently. Mm-hmm. I don't need to visit you at you know, under dirt. I need to love you now and I need to have you know how much I love you now because I don't need that. I don't think. Clearly, I haven't gone through an experience like that, thankfully, where I get to experience really how I would grieve through that process. But I don't like what I lost both my grandmothers the same year. And
that's hard.
It's and a couple of months apart. And so when my maternal grandmother passed, and she had dementia, so she was bedridden forever. She couldn't remember anybody. She couldn't eat. There was no quality of life. She was just in bed for like years, and nobody wanted to let her go because, you know, we feel like, well, I'm not going to kill her, right? So when she passed, I put my mother on a plane, and I was like, the money for my flight, you can use for arrangements, right? When my paternal grandmother died, she was like, they couldn't stop the bleeding for days. And so I got a call at 5 o'clock in the morning. I was on my way to work when we worked Saturdays. And I had my little weekend bag from New York, which consisted of clean underwear and a t-shirt. Mm-hmm. It was in the summer. And I was getting ready to leave. And on my way to work, I got a call saying, you know, we don't think she's going to make it through the night. So my sister and I and my brother got on a plane and we went and said our goodbyes while she was alive. When she passed, that was it. I made my peace. And that's how I grieve. Right. Like I don't necessarily need to be there once you've gone. But again, everybody grieves differently. Mm-hmm. And so there's it's a really, really tough thing to even, you know, come to terms with. Well, he wants to be cremated and you've essentially violated his wishes. What do I do? Do I have him exhumed and carry out his wishes so that I can feel like I did well for my son?
Yeah.
You know, it's tough.
It is tough. It's not easy. You know, my grandmother, the anniversary of her death was a couple of days ago, like 4 days ago. She died last year, my maternal grandmother. And, you know, we had to bring her body to Puerto Rico because that's where she wanted to be buried. And it became this huge thing because they didn't know whether they wanted to bury her with her first husband, the second one, or the third. And the kid went bananas.
Hold on, time out.
I love it.
So my grandmother had 16 kids. I mean, she had,
I know.
She was
fertile.
She was nannying. Good for her.
The triplets, Jesus, Maria, Jose.
Right.
Jesus, Mary, Joseph. I know. And then there's, you know,
she was basically pregnant for most of her life.
Pretty much.
My grandmother was too. She had a total of 17 children. We lost 9.
Mm-hmm. Holy fuck.
Like, can you imagine losing 9 children?
No.
That's...
Like miscarriages or like other way?
It was either a miscarriage or a stillbirth or sudden infant death. Yeah. Syndrome. So.
Now, most of my grandmother's kids actually made it to their teen.
Do you think that's because of...
Poor healthcare.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. She literally had to have a discussion, a very heated discussion as to whether she was getting buried with her first husband, her second, or her third.
And I can imagine all the kids, no, with my dad. But Tommy, that is exactly the point that we're making. If she had said, I want to be buried in Puerto Rico and I want to be buried here, that would have taken all of that away. And that's what I try to explain to my parents. I know you can't have that conversation with your mom.
No.
But it's what I try to explain to my parents and even my siblings. I don't want to leave that up to you because that's going to cause pain and it's going to cause discord. And I don't want to do that. So now you have to deal with my death and grieving me. And you also have to make all these decisions. I'm not doing that to you.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you exactly where you're going to put me. And I don't want a funeral.
Put me in a canister.
Yes.
That's all I want. Spread my ashes all over P-Town.
Freaking science.
That's really what I keep saying to my mother. I was like, when I die, just take my ashes, burn my body, take my ashes, and take me to P-Town and just sprinkle me all over that breaker. That's it.
The breaker.
You know, I have a friend, and again,
we're just
going to
leave her
this.
Under the dick dock, but anyway.
I'm like, oh, where's Tommy?
Your mom's going to be like, where are you taking him? I'm like, don't worry, he'll be happy.
Or you can just make it a thing. I have my friend. Forget my sad story now because I don't think we can recover from that.
I'll be under the boat slip for the rest of my life.
Think of me when
but
you're down
be
there.
Water and you know casual sexual encounters all over you. You'll be fine.
Casual sexual encounters for the rest of your time at peace.
Uh-huh. Yes, yes.
And for some reason, that seems right.
I think so. Yeah. Oh my God, I can't. That was good, though.
Yeah, a bunch of irreverent assholes.
All right.
Just go home, make rice. I'll be there in a little bit.
Do you have something else that you wanted to throw in there? You said you were going to say something and then
no,
you're like,
no, because it's like super sad. We're over it now.
Yeah, we need to move past. Like, okay. We talked about. We got it. Let's talk about something happy. I got nothing, but.
So, did I tell you guys that I totally got some Mama Kim bling? I don't think I plugged her for
no,
that.
No, you did.
I did. She put it in the mail for me in butterfly wrapping. It was the highlight of my week.
She's amazing.
I just want her to hear it because I loved it. And the world should know. Carry
on. They're amazing. So she's making these little keychains.
That's exactly what I got.
Flags. And so we're still in the works, and I'm excited because I can't wait for you guys to be able to get your hands on them. So, you know, she's still doing her thing, getting everything registered and set up and talk about, you know, merchandising and all that stuff. But I'm excited for her, and I cannot wait because we're going to advertise this shit out of it.
Everybody in my life is getting one. Everybody.
Especially
my mom.
Oh, God. She going to hate you for that.
But people are going to think I'm gay. I'm like, yes, mom. At 67, with three children, with your one partner that you've had for 60 years, people will think you're gay.
You never know. It's never too late.
That would be delightful.
It would never be too late.
It would be delightful.
And you know how Latin parents are.
I know. It would be fucking amazing.
Mira, después de 60
años, me metí a maricona. Me ha gustado
Nick is like, what the fuck?
I'm getting my dictionary, but I just can't keep up.
All right. So listen, why don't we jump into one of the last few things that we're going to be discussing today or going through, which is, of course, Mama Kim's Minute. Mm-hmm. Let me get a timer here.
Actually, before we start, I'm going to talk because it's kind of like a happy. I'm trying to like uplift the mood a little
Please.
Bit. I'm trying to be like, I need a fuck her moment. So I'm going to bring that up. So this story came from Mama Kim. So perfect segue. So an adoption agency finally did something right.
Do tell.
All right. So there was a Christian couple that was rejected as foster parents because they said they would send their kid to conversion therapy.
Oh my God, I love them so hard right now.
It's pretty
amazing.
You're
going to tell me that you're going to take the kid to, you're going to send the kid to get torture and you think I'm going to give you a kid?
Right.
Like, grow up.
Bye, Felicia.
But the thing is, then you look at all of these adoption agencies that are like, I'm not going to, you can't adopt because you're gay. Or you,
a lot of them are religious adoption.
And then there's legislation that's literally being passed in different states saying, oh, you can discriminate against LGBTQ members within LGBTQ community members because they're gay and they want to adopt. There's literally things that have been passed. There's legislation on the table. Like, it is happening. And to see this,
it's uplifting.
Good it's a little
job.
Uplifting, right?
Good job.
It's like, it's pretty exciting.
So speaking of uplifting, so we spoke about Billy Porter earlier, and he did, when Donald Trump, or Donald Dump, as I like to call him, did his State of the Union, Billy also did a State of the Union as well. It wasn't as long, obviously, as that idiot president.
But it was better.
But it was much better. And in that, he said that, you know, that we're going to go through some stuff, but we have to unite and, you know, come together. And in the end, you know, we're going to see brighter days, right? We've seen so many things happen. We've seen so many different initiatives to bring the community down. But then you're starting to see, you know, people making notable appearances. We're starting to see more reputable LGBT roles in TV and film. And you're starting to see our lives displayed in real ways that make substantial efforts in letting others know that we are here, we are queer, we're not going anywhere. And I think that he did such an amazing job in bringing us the State of the Queer Union. Is that what it was?
The LGBTQ State of the Union.
There you go. And I thought it was just amazing. And watching him speak, he's just so amazing and uplifting. And he's also doing amazing shit. I mean, hello, he is on Pose right now, and he is killing it as Pray Tell. And as he says, the category is
whatever you want it to be, motherfucker.
That's right. So, all right, are we ready for Mama Kim?
Oh, fuck. Yeah, fine.
Okay.
I was trying to literally pull up the transcript from the thing, but whatever.
We can do
that later. Tommy just makes us all nervous. It makes us cute.
I'm like, I'm sitting here. I'm like, oh, he just went that direction. So I got to pull this up real quick. And I'm like,
I don't like him looking at me because I'm like looking at my nose. Like, what did I miss?
You're a mess, both of you. All right, I'm gonna do the countdown.
I'm not ready. Hold on.
Oh, she's not ready. So Elsie,
all right.
How are you? How are your notes over there?
They're good. Did I miss something?
No, you're
Stop
good.
Stop looking at me.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right, and we're gonna do it in 3, 2, go.
All right, everybody, here's Mama Kim's Minute. So number one, a man barged into a class to give out anti-gay pamphlets. University said it was okay because he's married. What?
whatever.
Two, you. Christian couple, which I already talked about, rejected as foster parents because they would send their kid to conversion therapy.
Because
that's
they're daughters. Mm-hmm.
Three, woman who voted for Pete Buttigieg was disgusted to find out he's gay.
Boo.
These are the voters of America, people. Number four, Donald Trump gives man who insulted people with AIDS the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
That's fuck your president. Her.
And that's fuck your Mama Kim's Minute this week.
36 seconds. Proud of you. So let's talk about this Pete Buttigieg situation.
Oh, can I just say? Pete might just be conservative enough as a Democrat to get some Republican votes. I'm just saying.
I agree.
He is super conservative. People seem to not get how conservative he is.
He's actually very progressive. Like, if you go on his website and read some of the policies and stuff that he's promoting.
But in his values,
yes.
He might be the candidate we need to bring this back to our court.
He makes a great point that every single time we've ever elected a president that came out of left field, like Barack Obama, like, you know, not that I'm comparing him to Obama. I love me my Obama. But, you know, it's always been someone that's not part of the establishment, right?
Right.
But what I wanted to highlight, regardless of how you feel for Pete Buttigieg, because let me tell you, there's a lot of people in our community even.
I want to make clear he is gay.
That they're infuriated at the fact that, you know, he's just not progressive enough. He's not Bernie. But I will highlight this. It is 2020, and we have a major Democratic candidate for president of the United States that's openly gay.
Legally married to his husband.
Right here. Came out on the cover of Time, the possible first family, who is running for office and has won a caucus and could potentially win tomorrow when they do the primaries in New Hampshire. He won. He beat all of the other candidates in the very first contest of the primary season. And so
you're so fucking queer. Contest, really?
Yeah. I think the biggest issue, I think that's amazing, and he is historic, and what he's done is historic. But the reality within this situation is the fact that this woman was 100% behind Pete Buttigieg
until she found out he was gay.
How did you not know he was gay?
But let's forget how dumb that even is.
That's my point. This is an American voter.
But you're going to disregard his values that you fully supported because where he likes to put his penis, nobody asked you where you like to put your vagina.
Legit.
How is this a thing?
But it is. But
I'm just floored by this whole thing. I'm like,
that's hilarious.
This is why Trump is president.
Yeah. Yes, this is exactly why. This is exactly why.
All I say is this. It is huge for the LGBTQ plus community to see someone who's of our community, regardless if you like to categorize him that way or not. He is part of the LGBT community. He's married to a man. I don't know how much more gay you want him to be, but he's running for president.
I mean, he's never going to be me, so.
No, I don't think anybody could ever be you.
Valid. Yeah.
You're unique. A unicorn all on its own.
Oh, thanks.
You're welcome,
darling. That was so sweet.
I'm going to get you a nice little
it's
golden
horn. It's
also
true.
Yeah. Aww. And so it's just powerful. It's powerful to see, you know.
It is.
Somewhere in America, there's a little boy that's looking on TV and seeing
a man and husband,
literally on TV.
Representing the people that elected him.
That's right. Running for president.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we need to bring home, regardless of how you feel. I know that we all have our political differences regarding which candidate suits you better. It's just I wanted to highlight the importance of what just happened Tuesday.
And I would love to call on the community to not focus so much on whether he is progressive enough or gay enough, and rather speak about him as a politician like we do about every other fucking candidate.
That's right.
That's what we need to start doing. We can go against his policies all we want. We can support all his policies all we want. But the fact that he's married to another man should not be what we have against him or for him.
Can I also get on a little bit of a soapbox? It's not going to be crazy, but I also want to slam the gay community that's gone against him, gone against him to the extent where they're creating Facebook pages against him, where they're saying negative things against
Queers
him. And
against
I know
Pete.
On this show,
yes. There's a whole website.
On I this know. Show, I have said I don't think it's the right time, and he has proven me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
100% proven me wrong, but not once did I put him down.
No.
And as a community, whether you support him or you support Bernie or you support like Warren, whoever, as a community member, do not attack, uplift. Support the fact that he's there and running and being historic, because this is something that none of us have seen in our lifetimes and maybe won't again, or maybe will. But the reality is, if we as a community continue to tear each other down, it's not going to get any better.
Right.
We're just feeding into what Trump's already done.
Right.
Well, I think that this generation, the younger generation now, falls short in the sense that they don't see the significance of something like this, right? Versus the older communities or the older generations that experienced the
struggles of hiding and not ever being represented and not being able to talk about it. As a human.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and so it's amazing to see, you know.
I mean, and just the comments that are being made, it's actually kind of gross.
Yeah,
he's too straight to be gay, or
that to me is disgusting.
Or
it's disgusting, really.
Or
really?
He looks like somebody that's only mask for mask, and I'm like, really? Have you seen Pete Buttigieg? Like, no. I'm just like, is this what our community is doing to one another? Like,
that, it is disgusting.
We have to be,
which is why I
we
said,
have to be united to win this. Like,
how gay does he have to be? Like, really? Like, does he have to, like, you know, snort poppers and go into a like room and suck?
He probably has
and have somebody do a bukkake session in a room somewhere to be gay enough to be able to
deserve... is a politician.
Yeah,
he's everything that we want in a politician. He's happily married in a stable relationship.
They would take issue with stable relationships too, because
right, yeah. Yes, well,
because there's also the concept of open relationship.
However,
non-monogamy.
When we're talking about politicians and having a candidate that will stand a chance, we cannot let those kind of principles deter us from the support and potentially seeing an openly gay president. That's because right. We do get caught up on those little things. As a politician, if he were straight, we would think about these things. You know, is he promiscuous? Is he cheating on his wife? We will look at all these things. And I don't think we should judge him differently just because he happens to be married to a man.
All right.
These are, unfortunately, are the values that the things that we value in our society.
And we also have to look at the fact that, you know, we had a president that was acquitted for getting his dick sucked in the White House.
Right.
We had another president that, you know, got acquitted for, like,
molesting women,
pretty much, and grabbing them by the pussy. So it's like, you know, let's do what we need to do and stand behind. Listen, even if you support, like you said, if you support another candidate during this presidential primary, don't knock someone from the community down for trying. He's trying. I think that he's doing a great job.
And I also, like, you look at the, sorry, we need to close this out, but like, you look at our world leaders, we have gay world leaders now.
That's right.
We do. Like, in very high places of power. And they are literally aligning themselves and grouping themselves and looking at our president and laughing. And yes. Talking about our president behind his back. I'm actually kind of supportive of that. Not like talking about him, like we talk about one another, like in a negative way, but they're just like, what the fuck is he doing?
Right.
This is not how you run a country. And you have people running countries that are gay, that are married, and they're doing it with poise and dignity and making the right decisions. And Trump is dividing our country and the world is laughing at him, including gay leaders.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't a gay leader be an American leader?
I think it would be great. But you know what? Out of all the things that I'm more excited for, seeing Pete Buttigieg win and be in the White House, is to see what Chasten does with the Christmas decorations, the holiday decorations, and how they
better do it well.
The state dinners. I think he would. I think they would.
They just fantastic. Honestly, I love them, but I feel like they're gonna have to call in a pinch hitter. They seem like a very organized and very straight knit family, but maybe they do have really great gay taste.
But we won't hold it against him if he doesn't.
Exactly.
Because he's some nerd.
Because
politician.
He's smart enough to call in a pinch hitter.
Right. There you go.
Hello?
Yes. Yes.
So I just opened this magazine. By the way, Mama Kim sent us this.
Of course.
Over like almost over a year ago. And I, so on March 15th of 2019, she sent this to us. And there's a little note in here. I just found it. Did you see this note?
No.
So it says, "Dear Tom, Nick, and Chris," and of course now Elsie because she's sitting here, "I'm so glad that I was able to get copies of this magazine for us. Even if he doesn't win the nomination or election, this is an exciting step forward for the community. Thank you for all you do. Thank you for all that you guys do for so many. Love, Mama Kim."
Oh, I love her.
I just found this.
She's amazing.
And I don't want to start crying now. But,
yeah.
Oh.
And look how far we've come since that note.
Right? And he just literally won the Iowa caucus.
That's awesome.
So, all right. So, listen, we need to get to step in. So, why don't I throw it over to you? Would you like to, it's in the notes in there, read our Gay Talk term for today? It's in there. Let me see.
I hate Tommy.
I'll find it for you.
I hate Tommy so bad.
Let's see it right there.
Oh, right. You guys picked it.
Yeah, of course I did. So, all right. Ooh. So, this week's Gay Talk term, of course, is brought to you by
GayRealEstate.com.
Elsie, you did it. All right, Elsie, what is our Gay Talk term?
Bargain basement.
Uh-huh.
It's any place where it is easy to locate a sex partner.
I think that's where my ashes are going to be, in a bargain basement.
Well, it's going to be underneath a bargain dick dock.
Are like the sexual gay partners already there? Or what's the sitch here?
Yeah, I mean, if they want to be.
So you can just locate a sex partner. You can just walk in any place where you can just, you know, find someone to have
So you might have to bring the partner with you. I got it.
You can bring it with you, or you can just show up there and there he is.
Like just randomly waiting at a basement.
Oh my God.
I feel like I missed out on so much in life by not having a penis and being into other penises while having a penis. Yeah.
First world problems.
Yes. Straight women problems.
Nicholas.
All right. This week's On This Day in Gay History, of course, brought to you by Gay Real Estate. I'm sorry, guys. No, I was in the middle of texting somebody.
You did an LC.
All right. Anyway, sorry. So On This Day in Gay History, of course, brought to you by GayRealEstate.com. So Vardaman appears in a burlesque show when February 10th, 1916, where? Illinois. The Logansport Journal Tribune promises on February 6th that the Vardaman, the gay deceiver, will deceive you as he has deceived thousands before. Mansell Vardaman Boyle was a famous and successful female impersonator of the day. Drag queen.
So a drag queen.
Awesome.
Over 100 years ago, she better.
And it was like publicized.
That's incredible.
Cool. Yeah, that's kind of cool. That's
right?
Cool. Yeah, we forget just really how gay early civilizations were. Like, we forget that.
Like the Romans and the Greeks.
The Greeks.
Oh, what? I would have loved to live in ancient Greece.
Yeah. You could be like...
So I had read an article. I don't know how true this is, but supposedly that, you know, that the warriors would...
kept pretty boys around.
Yeah, no, but they would make you swallow their semen.
Okay, let's close the show. All right, we're done. Tom?
All right, well, listen, on that note, semen aside, if you love the show, make sure that you go subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcasting service. By subscribing, you get the latest and greatest of our show delivered right to your web browser or your favorite device as soon as our episodes are published. You can also support us on Patreon. That allows you, our listeners, to pledge a monetary donation, which we collect every month and can be in any denomination of a dollar or more.
Next week, we welcome It's All About the Dish with Chris returning from hiatus.
What?
Yeah, no, I tried to fix it, but you wrote it, so it's fine. Anyway, thank you to our guest host, Elsie, for joining us once more. She will be back. Believe me, she will be back.
I will be back.
We love having you on the show, and I'm pretty sure you're already booked for the episode after next week, so...
I think?
Yes.
All right. Anyway, so don't forget... Get your discount for the Future Method today. Each time you clean out with water or enemas, delicate tissues are harmed and cells are damaged, increasing chances of injury or STDs. The first of its kind, doctor-developed formula that gently cleanses before you play without hurting your bum. And now you can use code GAYTALK20 for 20% off, valid for one purchase or on a subscription per person.
Yas, Elsie?
We're going to put a rubber on it.
All right.
Are we?
Yes. Our show is available on our website, gaytalk20.com, under show and episodes. It is also available as a free download on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher Radio.
Nick announces you can find us on social media, Facebook, GAYTALK 2.0, Instagram, GAYTALK 2.0, Twitter, at GAYTALK20. You can email us at GAYTALK2.0@gmail.com. Tom, take it away.
And if you need to reach out to us, you can just head on over to our website, click on the Contact Us tab located at the top of your web browser. There you can leave comments, you can suggest topics, you can submit a question for the cast or for an individual host. You can also call us and leave us your question via voice message. The phone number is 334-GAY-TALK. And if you need those digits, it is 334-429-8255. Don't forget that the show streams live every Monday at 6-ish p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can access that live stream by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. Ladies and gents, that is our show. Thank you, and y'all have a good night.
Bye!
Thank you for listening to this episode of GAY-TALK 2.0. Tune in next time for more dish. Bounce, bounce.